Destination Freedom. Destination Freedom. Dramatizations of the great democratic traditions of the Negro people is brought to you by station WMAQ as a part of the pageant of history and of America's own Destination Freedom. After the Great War between the states, after the victory for one Union was won and emancipation proclaimed throughout the land, there were the bold days of the Reconstruction when the spirit of Abraham Lincoln marched on to attempt a free commonwealth of freedmen in the Old South. Among the freedmen who rose out of the chaos and conflict of the era, one became a United States Senator and fought courageously to make emancipation a living reality. We tell his story in The Saga of Senator Blanche K. Bruce.
Along the docks of the river that year, the rafts and the barges and the riverboats still grunted suspiciously as they crossed the Mason-Dixon line, slowly restoring trade between North and South. And on a chilly night of 1866, the steamer Jeff Davis sidled into the docks of St. Louis, dropped anchor, lowered its plank, and its captain supervised the unloading of its cargo of timber as he had done a dozen times before. And he pushed his crew as he had always done, but for once he saw one who was not moving.
Up, hurry, hurry now, heave, boys, heave. Hey, you, Bruce, Bruce.
Yes, Captain.
Here's nothing. You know what to do. Grab the wood, get started.
I've finished. What are you talking about? My papers, Captain. They call for a year's work. The year's up. And I'm through.
Oh, I see. You're bringing that up again. Mate.
Hey, aye, sir. He's been talking of quitting since we left Cincinnati. Let him quit, and the others will think they're free, too. You hear me, Captain?
I hear you, mate.
And you want us to take care of him? Nobody in Nashville's seen him yet. Nobody'll ever know.
Nobody'll ever care, either.
Shall I give the boys a nod?
No, I'll wait. My reputation on the river's for being reasonable, not rough. Bruce can be reasoned with, I hope. Bruce, step up here.
Yes, Captain.
I suppose you know how demoralizing it is for the others in the crew when they work so hard and yet see one of their own rank stand idle. Such an attitude is unwise for a slave.
For a slave? I suppose it would be. But I agreed to work a year, Captain. You may not have heard, but slavery is dead.
You may not have heard, but on this boat it's very much alive. Get back to work.
I'm going ashore.
Mate.
All right, boys. Take care of him.
Let me go. Let me go. Get your hands off.
I always said, Captain, a start club just behind the ears will keep quiet the loudest. What do you think?
I don't know. One loudmouth in the crew singing about freedom could wake up the others. And there's no telling when we'll be boarded by a federal inspector and he'd sing out, I'm sure.
Why take the risk?
What do you suggest?
It's not for me to decide.
What do you suggest?
Throw him over.
If there was ever a slave who needed subduing, he's it.
Well, death can subdue any of them, Skipper.
Yeah, I know that. But since he's such a smart one, I was thinking we ought to teach him a lesson.
You want the boys to reason with him below deck when he wakes up?
No. That'd be a calm thing to do compared with what I have in mind.
What have you in mind?
In 2 days, we dock in Natchez, don't we?
Yeah, of course.
Since our educated slaves are so anxious to get ashore, suppose we put him off Mississippi. Just let him free in Natchez. The night riders and angry overseers will take care of his free soul.
Skipper, I didn't think you had it in you.
Yeah, let him see how dead slavery is in Mississippi. I never did like the man. Just hold him below deck till we reach the Magnolia State.
And the steamer Jeff Davis, having unloaded timber at St. Louis, held on board one Blanche Bruce, who was brought on deck when the riverboat nudged its way into Natchez that night. And when the sun came up over the bosom of the Mississippi that morning, the captain measured the former slave with his eyes.
Bruce, ordinarily, for the impudence you've shown, the river above us would have long ago been your coffin.
What other burying ground have you found?
Over there.
Where?
East. that, my rebel, is the sovereign state of Mississippi. Before the war, it had more plantations than any other in the Union. It had the most slaves, and the overseers thought to it that they had the highest death rate. His plantations produced the most...
You're telling me what I know.
I don't suppose you know what's happened over there since the war.
No.
The old masters are determined that there'll be no changes in the status of the newly freed, no matter who won the war. I don't know where you come from or what you've been before, but I gave you a chance to work out on my boat and hide out from the riots that started now that the war's over. But you ask for your freedom. This is it. Well, the plank is down. Walk it.
He walked the plank to the newly liberated city of Natchez. Newly freed wandered around the city, searching for jobs, for homes, for clothes, for a chance to grip tighter the slim margin of liberty they had won out of the war. And Bruce, the refugee, wandered and searched with them. And on a street corner, white working men idle in the aftermath of the war heard an ex-overseer pound the air and declare a new war.
Listen to me. I tell you, things have come to a solid state. When up in Washington, you got traitors. Yeah, traitors to our beloved state's rights. Right now, passing bills to give equal rights to slaves. You know what'll happen then? It means the ex-slaves be calling for wages. There won't be enough jobs for the white men in Mississippi. It means slaves will be giving us orders and marrying our daughters and running and ruining this state. And you put that to happen just because Yankees with slave regiments beat us in battle? They meant protect your home. Drive the slaves back where they belong on the plantations under the whip. It's nature's law. It's meant that way. Wherever you see him, teach him the law. There goes one now. Get him. There he is. Get him.
And the idler turned and saw Bruce and set out after him. And he ran through the unknown streets, dodged the pellets and the stones, ducked around corners. And when he started stumbling down the end of a one-way street, he understood the captain's intentions. And he pulled up breathless under the awning of a shop window and turned to face the executioners.
Hurry. Come in here. This way, hurry.
What?
I can't keep the door open. Come on.
I'm coming.
There, that'll hold them if they don't try to ram it. Come away from the window. Over here. Now sit here quietly. There, they're going away.
Yes, they're going. You're trembling too.
I think I'm shaking more than you.
Why did you save me if you...
I guess it's your fingers. They're all smudged in printer's ink. Fingers like that, like mine. The ink never wears off. I guess it's our trademark. I couldn't let them hang another printer. Be like hanging myself. If you want to, you can work here in my shop with me. Maybe we printers can bring some sanity back into the state. My hand on it.
And the printers clasped their ink-stained hands, one white and one brown. And while the mob roamed outside and spread cold terror through the town, a warm friendship sprang up between the two printers that outlasted the riot. When a calm came over the state, the printers opened shop together and took in work from the few clients who still had time to read. And it was not long before a new client came in and noticed the new printer.
Where's Martin, the printer?
He stepped out a few minutes. Can I help you?
Aren't you being a little presumptuous?
I didn't think I was.
There's nothing you can do to help me. How long will your master be gone?
All the masters have been gone for quite some time now.
I see. You're very sure the masters won't be back and put you where you belong?
Very sure.
You're impudent, even before the state legislature has met to pass the new Yankee amendments. I've a good mind to show you how little change there's going to be.
Mr. Codby, were you looking for me?
Yes, Martin, I was.
Yes, sir?
I want you to print 60,000 copies of these leaflets. Have them ready for my office in a week. Can you do it?
Well, yeah. With my new printer, I think we can.
Does he have to work on them, too?
the only way we can get them out that quickly, Mr. Cartman.
Well, all right. This helper you've got, where'd he come from?
I've never asked him, Mr. Cartman.
I've seen him somewhere before.
A lot of good people in you here, Mr. Cartman. Take yourself, for example.
Have the order out in a week, soon if possible. Not sure that working on it might not teach a new printer a lesson. Good day, Martin.
Good day, Mr. Cartman.
Well, Bruce, seems we're set for a profitable week's work.
Yes.
Hey, let me unwrap the dummy copy left here. Cartman heads a new political party in the state. If we work for them, we don't have to worry about simple little things like food.
Let's see the copy.
Here you are. Start setting it up in the evening, and when... what is it? Can't you understand it?
Very well. No, we won't have to worry about simple things like food by printing Cartman's copy.
Then what is there to worry about?
Freedom.
The black printer handed the copy to his employer.
To all planters, overseers, ex-soldiers of the Confederacy, meet with me each night on my plantation in the next month so that we loyal sons of the South may forestall the coming election foisted upon us by Yankee armies and in which slaves are expected to vote. Meet with me and return your state to its rightful owner. Spread the news. I know what you're thinking, Bruce. You needn't look at me that way.
But printing this and putting it into their hands to spread across the state, it's putting a knife in the back of every free man.
Cartman's the wealthiest plantation owner left in the state. Mm. If we don't print it, he'll wreck my place. They'll see to it no word comes my way.
How do you stand on the election?
I've always wanted every man free.
I believe you. But ours is a trade that's supposed to expand the freedom you mentioned. Print these and we curtail it as sure as a planter's would.
Well, what would you suggest?
For every message of Cartman's we print, calling the ex-masters together, let's print one of our own to be distributed among the ex-slaves and calling them to register for the voting.
Yeah, it's a good thought, Bruce. Only there's one bit of difference.
Yes?
Most of the ex-slaves can't read yet. Most of the planters can't. You won't reach many by print.
Then if not by print, I'll reach them with my voice. Will you go with me, Martin?
My life is here in the shop. But they say ex-slaves are gathering in camps and trying to get this state to ratify the amendments and to get the rights of the ballot. I'll stay here and print the pamphlet if you'll go out and deliver them.
Day was for printing, night was for delivery. And the black printer walked the dangerous night roads and sought out the camp of free men. The camp of Tillman Johnson and others who had furnished underground troops for the Union Army. The print shop in Natchez was busy when one evening, ex-master Cartby and his men came by.
Well, Mr. Cartby, you're a little early.
Yes, seems some of your other customers are even earlier.
Well, what do you mean?
There's a heavy registration of ex-slaves for the voting.
Well, I suppose it's the novelty of the thing, Mr. Cartman.
It's more than the novelty, sir. Some agents are carrying messages between the camps of freedmen.
Well, it could be the carpetbaggers. Then there are some of those Union soldiers.
It's someone who knows something about printing.
Well...
Someone who can imitate the size and shape of the leaflets my party's putting out. Yeah. Here's a duplicate of my leaflet, but with a different message. Any idea where it came from?
Now, Mr. Carter, you don't need to pull your guns in here. Every print in Natchez uses that type.
Yeah, well, that could be. Easy with the guns, men. Where's this helper of yours, Martin?
Well, he's out on a delivery, Mr.
Delivering what?
Well, printing, of course.
When'll he be back?
I don't know when he'll be back. Might be late.
I see. Then it's good I have plenty of time today. Boys, make yourselves comfortable. Watch the streets. We're waiting.
and the printer finally came into the shop.
All right, boys, go over him.
Yeah. What? What is this? Hey, Martin,
hold up your hands. Hold up your hands and you'll live. Resist and you'll die. All right, go through his pockets.
Hold still, man. Hold still.
The order was carried out. The men of the planter found nothing. The planter looked at him long and quietly and said,
"How long have you been in this state?"
"Long enough to believe I know what it needs."
"I've seen you before, but I can't place where." "Well, now pay attention to me, you printer. I know there are men in your trade who have prematurely hailed the Civil War's end in a system that enriches the few at the expense of the many, as you put it. But before new laws are enacted, I'm going to do everything to stop it. I know there are white laborers and farmers who might join with the freedmen to vote to keep the ex-masters from any new power, but we'll stop them, too. Don't get in the way. All right, men, come along."
These white laborers, Mr. Martin, who'll join with Negro freedmen he speaks of, where can I find them?
You're not going out again tonight.
Every night.
Yeah, well, their leader's a miller named Johnny O'Hara. Holds conferences in a barn 3 miles north of Natchez.
What are you looking for?
Trade.
What kind?
I'm a printer.
Only farmers and field hands meet in here. Printers can't help us.
I can help your meeting.
How?
I can multiply your words. Spread them.
Come on in.
The printer walked inside the barn, and in the midst of the meeting of poor farmers who stared suspiciously at him while the leader speculated.
"You're either a saint or a fool for squawking out alone during these nights. Now, what is this about multiplying our words?"
"Print them, and thousands can know about them. I'm from a shop in Natchez."
"You've come just on a matter of business. Speak frankly or be on your way."
I heard you were deliberating as to whether to go ahead with the new amendments that are being proposed or to vote with the planters again.
"And some of the men think we've more in common with the ex-masters than with the Negroes."
"The ex-masters own 9/10 of the land in the state. Did your men own any?"
No.
"The ex-planters had slaves who worked free. Who did you have to work for you?"
"Ourselves."
"Then it seems on the essentials, you didn't have much in common with the masters."
"I've tried to sell them on that."
"Then if you can get together and agree to meeting with leaders of the freedmen and nominating both Negro and white legislators who have a common need for freedom, I'll multiply your words on my printing press, and I'll see that they're spread."
"Good. You've expanded your business, printer."
The printer's business expanded to include white farmers and Negro farmers, and to include the thousands of disfranchised of the state who called a conference to reconstruct the legislature of Mississippi. In Jackson in 1868, the convention gathered under huge tents. Men and women who 5 years earlier had never dreamed they had a common heritage and a common destination. John O'Hara presided and declared,
"This hour brings to a final end the slavery of white freedmen and Negro freedmen. I say white freedmen because no white laborer was any freer than the slaves during slavery. This hour of our gathering to carry out the program for all of us, and not the hour that ended the war, brings to an end the slave system."
And the printer recorded the speeches and multiplied them by thousands on his press, sent them across the state, and more men joined their ranks. When the elections were held that year, the ex-masters and the overseers had lost. That year, Mississippi sent its white and Negro sons to the state legislature. But the ex-masters regrouped, and again one evening, Cartby came by the printer's shop in Natchez.
"Good day. What can I do for you now, Mr. Cartby?"
"Martin, I've some more printing for you."
Some of the same as before?"
"Not exactly. They'll read a little differently now that Your Negro friends and white scalawags have decided to disgrace and demoralize the good name of Mississippi by sending Negroes to the legislature.
Mr. Carpenter, the last election's over.
Yes. Yes, but another is coming up, Martin. You're a printer, not a politician, and you ought to be more concerned with my copy.
I'm looking at it.
How soon can I have it?
Mr. Carpenter, I don't like this kind of copy. You see, it's not...
Not what, Martin?
Not true.
Since when?
Since Mississippi outlawed segregation and we got our civil rights code. It's not legal to print copy calling for night riders to visit the homes of the new leaders, Mr. Coffey. You'll have to find another printer.
I don't think so, Martin. Not if you value your shop.
You couldn't.
No, I couldn't. No. Later, I'll be able to. Bruce's side is having its day now, but the day of the planters is coming back. Mark my words, sir. By way of the ballot, if possible. If necessary, by way of the bullet.
The printer remembered it when slowly the control of the state was turned back into the hands of the planters, and Negro freedmen and white farmers split under the strain of terror that reigned again in the Mississippi counties. It was then the freedmen leaders called the troop printers into O'Hara's mill, and they had a proposal.
We're proposing a way of uniting the people again against the ex-masters, Bruce. We're proposing you run for senator.
Yeah, that's what you...
I've heard you, and I've thought about it.
Then act on it, man. We need you in Washington, near the president. Show him what's happening in Mississippi. Unless we get help, we're going back to slavery.
Right.
If I thought there was a chance of winning and doing good...
We'll make the chance.
It's not like running for a seat in the House. This way it'll mean the whole state's got to be behind me.
We can get them behind you. Here, Martin, come over here. You talk to him. Bruce is your friend. He'll listen to you.
If you run, Bruce, your opponent will be Carter Cosby. You mean the plantation owner. That's right. I run.
Good. Now, the names of the leaders must not be spoken until the time for the nomination. Cut, these men are strong. They'll put each of us on the death list. Keep very quiet.
Who's there?
Who knows we're here?
Duck down, help.
And they ducked down, but some never got to know they had already been put on the death list of the ex-masters, and the rifles checked down the list and accounted for six of the Reconstruction leaders. And one broke off and dashed toward Natchez and finally threw himself on the print shop door, strength too spent to twist the lock. And this time there was no one there to open the door and snatch him into safety.
Still breathing.
Hey, Chief, they got that Bruce table. Shall I finish her?
Wait. Hold on.
Here. Let me look. One pull of the trigger, Chief, and the Senate seat's yawn without a race.
Wait. His shirt's torn.
He won't need claws in a minute.
Open his shirt some more. I see. I see.
Say what, Chief?
Never mind. I think you can put away the gun. I don't think we'll need it for this election anyway.
The man put the gun away and was puzzled. As the days wore on and the printer seemed to survive and grow stronger, his speeches spawned new leaders to carry out the work of the Reconstruction. Then he received a visit from his opponent, Mr. Cartby.
You keep busy these days, Bruce.
Oh, it's you. What do you want?
I see here you're putting out circulars challenging me to debate with you in Jackson.
I see you've avoided answering
me. I'm trying to save you if I can.
From what?
From throwing away your life? Listen, this crazy idea of the Reconstruction is over. Oh, not this year, next. But it's over. The police, the new Klansmen, the courts are in our hands.
I've heard.
Then why don't you give up? Come over. Join us. We can find something easy for you. What's holding you up?
I don't know. Maybe it's because these last 10 years have been, well, glorious years. We've started a new generation on the road towards a freedom they never had before. I'll see you in Jackson on the platform.
if you're interested in finding out why I go on.
All right. I'll accept that offer, but I'd advise you not to be there, because, Bruce, I know now where I saw you before. I intend telling your prospective supporters where and how. You didn't know I knew?
Even so, I'll be there.
And in Jackson, the election crowd came to hear ex-Master Carpy as he stood upon the platform and called back at his opponent.
Gentlemen! Gentlemen! You all know me. You know before I came to this state I was a printer in Virginia.
That's right.
And I own sleeves.
Yeah, you own sleeves.
My record is clear. But I'd like to talk about my opponent. The radicals and carpetbaggers have never told you where he came from or what he did before he entered Mississippi. Well, I'll tell you. Will the chairman have him brought forward, please?
Let's call off your men. I'll come forward.
Now, that's very reasonable. Now, look, gentlemen, look. This is who the Reconstruction radicals are asking you to vote for. Would you like to know his history?
Yeah.
I'll take off his shirt and show you. Now, look. There, on his bare back, initials CC. Initials from my plantation in Virginia. He was my slave, gentlemen.
Yeah.
You asked to vote for a runaway slave. Yeah. See for yourself.
The printer stood with his back bare to the shouts and calls of the crowd. And when they had subsided, Bruce spoke.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes?
May I speak?
Well, I don't see what you got to say. I don't see any real... Well, if you're not afraid they'll hang you, go on.
Fellow Southerners. Fellow sufferers. It's true. I have been a slave. And at one time, Carter Codby was my master. But I escaped from slavery. When I came to Mississippi and saw that the old master groups were trying to renew slavery, I fought them with all I had. I've seen men go hungry and starve, and they were white as well as black, while the masters ate well. Once there were no schools for slaves. There were no schools for many of you freedmen who weren't property owners. The Reconstruction has brought you rights you never enjoyed before the war, even as freedmen. Are you to stand by and see the fruits of the Reconstruction destroyed by the owners and the masters? Now, perhaps, but not for long. No. No, the seeds of freedom lay too deep in our soil.
The crowd grew quiet and remained seated while the printer walked through the crowds of Jackson, shirt torn but spirit whole. A month later, Mississippi answered at the polls, and Blanche K. Bruce became the first ex-slave to be elected to the United States Senate. Destination Freedom has just told the story of Blanche K. Bruce, Reconstruction hero and senator from Mississippi. Destination Freedom is written by Richard Durham, produced by Homer Heck, and directed by Dick Loughran. The part of Blanche K. Bruce was played by Fred Pinkard. Our narrator was Tony Parrish. Others in the cast were Oscar Brown Jr., Ken Griffin, Jess Pugh, and Dean Almquist. Special music was composed by Emil Soderstrom and played by Elwin Owen and Jose Bethencourt. Our technician was Al Johnson, sound effects by Cliff Mueller. This is Charles Martin inviting you to be with us again next week when Destination Freedom will tell the story of the 761st Negro Tank Battalion. This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.